I always wear my mask and wash my hands after going home.
It's a good tuna, but I think I paid too much.
I am the king of the ring.
Welcome to the Japan What Podcast, episode 151. I am your host, Matthew PM Bigelow.com. Covering AI markets in Japan, Society 5.0, rising conflict in the Indo-Pacific, depopulation, migration, and more. This is the podcast coming at you from the Sanmon Cho Studios in Shinjuku, Tokyo, Japan, the armpit of Asia. Thank you for joining us today. Special day. This is the last time we'll be recording in the Sanmon Cho Studios. I'm not sure about the Tomihisa Cho Studios. I've relocated inside of Tokyo to an apartment just 10 minutes away. But let's just say Japanese apartments are notoriously small. And then when you have two kids and try to rationalize, like, we could still stay here. Look, we'll just put one kid there and one kid over here. And then they start interacting with each other. Then what happens? Then you say, take every single yen that I have or that my wife has and get us out of here. So we found a good spot. And that's what we're going to be doing. But we got a lot of cover today. And when it rains, it pours. So we're just going to jump right into it. Enough of me, my life and what I'm doing. We're going to begin with a little what. What's going on, a little odd news. I always like to begin this. I cover what I believe to be topics that are going to affect us all in the future. But I don't always just want to be like, I'm not a doom and gloom type person. I'm pretty not optimistic, but I like to enjoy life. But I also like to understand how trends might affect me in the future. And that's why I've launched this podcast, so I can kind of force myself to keep up to date with them, but also hopefully get other people interested in these overarching trends as well. Instead of just reacting to the social media algorithm, someone holds up a picture from their phone. It's like some shocking image. Like, is this shocking? You're like, oh my God, that's shocking. Like, what do we do? I don't know. But so anyways, but I like to begin with some lighthearted material or something from Japan. People like coming to Japan, not only for the food or whatever, but you know, it's known as a place that has its quirks. It's like everywhere else, but more so. Name that quote. So this one is called Baby Crying Sumo Contest. And this comes to us from JapanToday.com. It was the picture of the day for April 29th, 2024. And we're recording this on April 30th, 2024. The year's almost half over. It's been like 4 years since the 15 days to stop the curve. I believed it. What a lie. But anyways, there's this weird fascination with some aspects of Japanese child rearing where they intentionally make kids cry with performance and then think it's very cute and take pictures of it. And at first it seems a little abusive, and I don't think it's that abusive. Kids cry all the time for whatever reason. If you have kids, you know that. But there is something kind of cute about the super reaction of children crying. So it might be like a demon comes to the classroom and scares all the kids and they run away. Yeah. Kind of bad, but also very cute if you look at all these kids screaming. And they also do it with the sumo wrestlers. Baby crying sumo contest. And I'll be posting pictures of the baby crying sumo contest up onto the official website of the podcast at MatthewPMBigelow.com. This is just more of a caption of the photo. An extended caption from Reuters. Babies cry while held up by amateur sumo wrestlers during Nakizumo, or a baby crying sumo contest. Naki meaning crying, and sumo or zumo meaning sumo. where two wrestlers hold a baby each and a referee makes faces and loud noises to make them cry and determines the winner based on the loudest baby at Sensoji Temple in Tokyo on Sunday. That's a major temple, by the way. The ritual is believed to aid the healthy growth of the children and ward off evil spirits. Yep, that's why you can use this explanation for any kind of questionable behavior you may engage in. So you might be drunk and peeing on somebody's fence and you're like, whoa, I'm just trying to help the healthy growth of your fence and to ward off evil spirits. You could walk up into an elevator and just let loose a big fart by accident. Some woman's like, oh, bleh. And you're like, whoa. I'm just trying to promote healthy growth and ward off evil spirits. Yeah, you just put whatever, you do whatever questionable behavior, and then bookend it with, I'm just trying to promote healthy growth and ward off evil spirits. I don't know what you're doing, but you seem like a real lazy son of a bitch to me. All right, that's the baby crying sumo contest. It's a weird volume control I have on that plugin. It's a universal audio plugin, but it's one of those based on like an older type of preamp, and it goes in like, instead of gradually, it just like, oh, it's suddenly loud. All right, let's take a look. Let's dive into this. We're going to begin with some, we're going to do a lot of Japan Society 5.0 and AI today. But first, I would just like to take a look at some overall trends in Japan. Is it good? I don't know. But let's take a look at it regardless. Let's do this one. All right. Well, that's just my Japan intro for today. I'm like I said, I just moved and I got a lot of things going on. Sometimes the soundboard will take a life of its own. I don't normally cover politics, especially minor politics like by-elections or something like that. But I've noticed a lot of reactionaries on Twitter or in the international media will be like, well, Japan as a traditional society would just never put up with this woke nonsense, you know, relating about whatever woke nonsense they're talking about in America or the greater G7 sphere of influence of which Japan is a part of. And I'm kind of saying, you know what, guys, we're going pretty left, actually. It's just not reported about because everybody who says, well, let's just look at Japan. I mean, they would never do such a thing. Like, they are traditional. Like, those people, they don't read Japanese news in English or in Japanese. They haven't been here in 20 years. When they do come here, they're just like, I want to go eat sushi. You know, they're not really taking their awareness of what's going on in their old culture and trying to understand it, understandably so, while they're on vacation in Japan. So this is to kind of illustrate or highlight or show that the in Japan it is shifting left. It's weird because the ruling party in Japan, the LDP, under Shinzo Abe, who was assassinated by a rogue church member of the Moonies or the Unification Church, the replacement for Shinzo Abe was like, hey, I'm a right-wing nationalist, ha ha ha. But the replacement for him was Suga, who was his secretary, basically, you know, political secretary. And then after that, the Prime Minister Kishida came in. And Prime Minister Kishida is very much on board with most of the SDGs, the Black Rocks, the Bill Gates. Like, he gets awards from them and he goes and meets them and hanging out with Klaus Schwab and all that. So it's not like some sort of, you know, hermit situation like North Korea or, oh, we're not changing over here in Japan. We would never do that as a traditionalist society. I mean, the what's going on in Japan is not talked about nearly enough, considering it's one of the major economies in the world, or is it, as we'll get into today. But this is from JapanToday.com as well, by Mari Yamaguchi, and she also, yeah, she writes for the Associated Press. She's very proud of that, but good for her, because she's actually, I don't know, she writes reports as you'd expect reports to be written, and you'd be like, well, there might be a little bit of bias there, but it's not insane. So thank you, Mari Yamaguchi, for not being an insane journalist. Very rare these days. Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida's governing party, stung by an extensive slush funds scandal, which Kishida kind of brought to light, appeared to have lost all three seats in Sunday's parliamentary by-elections, according to media exit polls and preliminary results. The Liberal Democratic Party's loss is considered a voter punishment for its links to a years-long corruption saga. Well, this is where I disagree. I think it's just because Kishida's policies have been totally garbage, and we've seen the yen plummet in value and the economy just stagnate and get even worse and worse and worse due to the reactionary policies of the coronavirus pandemic. Nobody talks about that. No. Oh, no, no, no. Our lives aren't worse because of all of the horrible decisions that were made during the pandemic. We're going to forget all about those and point at a very typical political party scandal. Look, they're mismanaging their funds. Oh, my goodness. A political party mismanaging their funds? How dare they? Let's vote them out. How much was it? Hundreds of thousands of dollars. Oh, that is beyond the pale. With our GDP of X amount of trillion dollars, we got to get rid of those people. No, no, no. I don't think it's the year. This is the slush fund scandal. It's the lockdowns, the plummeting of the yen, every decision leading to worse financial situations for the people of Japan. And they're just not happy with how the country is going. No, nobody's happy with how the country is going. Anyways, so the liberal-leaning main opposition Constitutional Democratic Party of Japan, or the CDPJ, was certain to win all three seats in Shimane, Nagasaki, and Tokyo, according to exit polls by national NHK television, Kyoto News, and other media. CPDJ leader Kenta Izumi said the by-elections were about political reforms. Quote, "There are many voters across the country who also want to show some similar views," he said, adding that he will seek early national elections if reforms by the governing party are too slow. Oh, the reforms are too slow. Oh, that'll get everybody on board. Hey, Mr. Sato on the street, do you think these reforms are too slow? Yes, it's pissing me off. We gotta get these reforms faster. It's what I want from my political parties. I wake up in the morning and I think of politics, reform, slow. I don't think that's what they're thinking. I think it has to do with the nightmarish situation due to the fallout of the pandemic policies that were implemented as a part of a Build Back Better, Great Reset policy that even the Prime Minister Suga, who was replacing Shinzo Abe, he, in his address to the UN that he gave, he said to them, "We believe in the Build Back Better movement." Essentially, he mentioned the words Build Back Better. They were in the English translation as well, directly from the UN speech, not some affiliate member where they can kind of fudge the translation of the wording. And then, of course, COVID-19, The Great Reset, is a book written by Klaus Schwab, founder of the World Economic Forum. And Klaus Schwab and Kishida met several times, and Kishida's entire policy of new capitalism is just a rewording of stakeholder capitalism, which is another Klaus Schwab, World Economic Forum talking point. So that's that. But notice that a lot of people are saying, well, Japan is just going to become even more conservative, or they just hold their values so dear. Well, the LDP, like I mentioned, is shifted, the main governing party of Japan, which has led Japan since the end of World War II, except for a brief period after, right before the Fukushima disaster, when they really lost all of their seats to the DPJ, which was renamed the CDPJ, which is the the party now that just won 3 seats in the by-election. It's not like it's a big deal, but what it indicates is though the LDP has moved from Abe, which was right, to Suga, which was Abe, to Kishida, which is this neoliberalism type of venue. And then when the by-elections happen, it's not as though the reaction of the public is to go way back to the right again towards Shinzo Abe. The public reaction in 3 districts across Japan has been to go more of to the left wing as well. So there's not like this political awakening in Japan amongst the plebs, even though we see more protests happening. But when the results of those that end up with the reins on power, when those results are announced, it's not the people, it's not the people protesting that are gaining the power. It's the people voting that are gaining the power. And the people are voting more towards left-leaning organizations. And I think it's just because left-leaning organizations, well, the CPDJ is known as the official opposition party, so a lot of people might just be voting against the LDP. The anti-vote is a very common thing in Japan. But also, liberals tend to find more appealing causes in times of struggle, like, oh, things are bad, but we'll make it better. We'll provide for you. We'll give you more school lunches, stuff like that. And people might be voting with that in mind. The economy is tanking anyways. It's all going to shit. I may as well vote for the party that will give me some free stuff in return. It might be something along those lines, or I could be wrong. But the overall arching commentary that, oh, Japan, traditional society, they're not putting up with this stuff. No, they are. And they're putting up with it even more. Japan and EU to boost economic security ties and reduce dependency on China. We'll see how that works. And then the last one that I just wanted to focus on in brief, this comes to us from the AsiaNikkei.com, and that's the English version of the Nikkei. And the Nikkei is just a globalist repeater station. It's the New World Order, the rules-based international order repeater station, or fount. It's not a repeater station. They get orders, and then they're one of the first to kind of announce them in English in Japan, and then others will follow. Editorially speaking. So this comes to us from Ryosuke Hanada, Nikkei staff writer, April 21st, 2024. Again, we're not a breaking news podcast. We're looking at analyzing trends from the recent past, how it's maybe affecting us now, and how it might affect us in the future. India to surpass Japan as 4th largest economy in 2025, IMF says, the International Monetary Fund. I believe that's what it means. Now, just last year, Germany surpassed Japan as the world's 3rd biggest economy. When I moved to Japan in 2006, Japan was the 2nd biggest economy. And I think China surpassed Japan towards the late aughts, 2009, 10, 11-ish. And then Japan lost out to Germany in the last year only because of the weakening yen. And Germany, if you've listened to the interview I did with Michael Yon last year, week, Germany is losing its industrial base. They're turning off their nuclear plants. They're turning off their nuclear plants and shutting down a lot of their industry. They can't secure the resources as much anymore. But even with all of that, they still overtook Japan. And now India is going to predicted to surpass Japan in the next year or so. So we've gone from the number 2, and let's just think about like in the early 2000s, India was just a place that had a lot of people and, you know, that was it. But now India is climbing up into the top echelons of the world GDP. But at the same time, they still have unspeakable poverty there and garbage is everywhere. So it's not as though it's the end all and be all, but it kind of shows that Japan is changing. Japan is changing very quickly and Japan is becoming less of an economic powerhouse and more of a legacy power structure. So we'll see how that goes into the future. Anything else on Japan for today? I think that's fine. Let's take a look at getting out of here. All right, well, next we're going to take a look at Japan Society 5.0.
The fourth industrial revolution will enable us to create a new society.
What?
Artificial intelligence will transform the big data collected through the Internet of Things into new wisdom. Society 5.0. A technology-based, human-centered society. The fourth industrial revolution will raise our standard of living and solve various challenges we face.
Thank you, Klaus.
It will, for example, free us from the stress of driving, allowing us to safely visit anyone, anytime.
Whoa.
We will have access to the latest medical advancements at a low cost, no matter where we are. AI and robots will enhance human ability and expand our infinite possibilities, helping us enjoy more fulfilling lives. Society 5.0, for the betterment of human lives.
All right, and that Japan Society 5.0, Fourth Industrial Revolution, is a Japanese government plan. They've had giant tech shows in Japan, C-Tech 2023. The theme was Japan Society 5.0, and I worked in a telecoms company for 4 or 5 years teaching this stuff to their executive suite and some of their higher-ups. Maybe not all of the executive suite, that's a little much, but the VPs and a lot of the engineers, and some of those engineers were also involved with CyberSec and AI markets. And the company had invested $100 billion into AI tech at that time. And I saw, despite the promises of the technology, a lot of the companies just fail for a variety of reasons. A lot of it is scoundrel activity, and then a lot of it is the inability to understand how AI interacts with the real world, like the physical world. It's not just some program that makes everything happen automatically. Anyways, so I have quite a lot of standing in this area, and I've been doing this podcast for a few years now, focusing on AI. And as you know, 4 or 5 years ago, AI was still not that much of a big deal, but now we're just awash in AI, and I've been ahead of it for quite a while now. So let's take a look. This one comes to us, just an interesting one. And it would be, I would be remiss if I did not cover it. This one was referenced to me by a listener of the Japan What podcast. Thank you very much, Mr. Michael. Appreciate it. Japan to trial AI scheme for spotting bears as attacks on humans rise. Covered this as well with a little bit, the attacks of bears with Michael Yon, how with depopulation going on in northern Japan, it's not as though you just have wide open fields and less people so you can party and get more meat because there's less competition. Things like bears start moving in. So instead of having to deal with some jerk down the road, you have to deal with bears. I don't know which one's worse. The Japanese government is, okay, well, this one comes to us from Kyoto News, and this is from 14 hours ago on recording on April 30th. The Japanese government is planning to trial an artificial intelligence system for spotting wild bears to better deal with an increasing number of attacks by the animals on humans. Under the system, AI, I hate this writing, by the way, I'm sorry, AI will use security camera footage to instantly detect bears and share the information with the relevant authorities. Now, this should be written very differently. Obviously, the people writing this have no idea how AI actually works, because AI does not use security camera footage. I would say, based on security camera footage, engineers are implementing AI systems to identify where bears are located and at what times. Something like that. You kind of have to use a passive tense, unfortunately, but journalists were always like, no, we can't use the passive. It hides the truth. The pilot scheme is planned to begin by summer in Toyama Prefecture. If found to be effective, the AI system could be rolled out to prefectures where frequent bear sightings near residential areas have been reported. The plan comes in response to the 198 bear attacks on humans across 19 prefectures in the previous fiscal year, which ended in March. Sounds like a lot of bear attacks, doesn't it? I think so. I just saw another video of a dude in a truck driving down a road, and a bear jumps out of the woods and starts attacking the truck. The truck has to, like, the dude driving the truck hits the pedal to the metal, but that truck was screwing that up. It was fudging that truck up, and you knew what way. The incidents, which resulted in, this is a weird one, 219 casualties, including 6 deaths, record highs since fiscal 2006 when comparable data became available. Scarce food sources for the bears due to poor crops are believed to be behind the increased instances of bears entering human spaces. I've also heard people tie this into global warming. I think it's depopulation, just a lot more empty spaces, and that means other things are moving in. The new system is expected to be helpful as it connects AI with governmental, municipal, and private camera networks. In the trial in Toyama Prefecture, the system is expected to use cameras installed for surveillance and disaster management by the central and prefectural government facilities, as well as those used by utility companies. I hope the government really gets high-definition cameras involved in there. If you can get gigapixel cameras, because a lot of this AI camera stuff is based on pixel identification. So if you have very high pixelization or high pixel rates in your cameras, then you are able to create finer detection systems for the AI to analyze. So you get fewer false positives. So instead of just some dude in a bear costume or a bunch of trees that look like a bear, send the people there. Oh, it's not a bear. It's just a tree that looks like a bear. And then a bear attack happens somewhere else. Oops, sorry. Our AI system was wrong. You know, something like that could happen. So hopefully the camera systems are pretty good for that. So anyways, just looking at AI for cameras and bears. Okay, this next one's very interesting, and it's something I've been covering on the Japan What podcast for a few years now. It's a little bit of a shout back to the previous news about Euro and Japan on economic security and blah, blah, blah. The Euronews.next, EU policy and EU-Japan to cooperate on AI and data flows. Now, when I saw this, I immediately recognized data flows. Free flow data with trust is something that the previous governor, the late Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, brought up at the World Economic Forum like 7-8 years ago, and it was to have more data flow freely between countries that have similar, you know, pacts and agreements and so on. Basically, United States and Japan, but not Japan and Russia, something like that, along those lines. But the idea was also installed into the Center for the Fourth Industrial Revolution in Japan, which is a World Economic Forum proxy. And last year at the Hiroshima Summit, the Fourth Industrial Revolution Center in Japan raised free flow data with trust to the Japanese government, to Digital Minister Taro Kono, I believe. And then he adopted, or more or less the Japanese government adopted through a private-public partnership, this idea. So it was like, it's a weird circulatory system. It's like Shinzo Abe brings it up at the World Economic Forum, and then the World Economic Forum sets up a proxy in Japan, and then this proxy in Japan works on it and raises it again to the government at a public-private partnership meeting at a G7 summit. And then the Hiroshima AI policy is announced, and it incorporates a lot of these things. And then EU, which is a regulatory, you know, bonanza, if you really love regulations, wants to get in on the action as well. So it's interesting that despite the Europe not doing very well, in my opinion, and Japan still wants to edge it closer and closer to it, while still saying that they want nothing to do with China, but then they also go to China all the time and say, well, let's actually do business together, China. That's kind of the way it works. Let's read. The European Union and Japan will announce a cooperation between the EU's AI office and Japan's Safety Institute at the EU-Japan Digital Partnership Council on April 30th. As a first step towards interoperability, Japanese companies are encouraged to participate in the AI Pact, initiated by the European Commission to foster early compliance for companies on a voluntary basis with key provisions of the AI Act before it becomes generally applicable. The EU's AI Act, which regulates machine learning systems based on the risk they pose, meaning they want to control it, is expected to formally become law in June. The AI office, an internal department within the commission, will supervise the rules for general purpose AI systems and function as a central coordination body for AI policy at EU level. At the EU-Japan Council, both sides will say they will support the so-called Hiroshima AI process set up by the G7 under Japan's presidency in May 2023 with the aim of promoting safe, secure, and trustworthy AI. They plan to make a joint call at the OECD, European, I can't remember, ministerial meeting taking place in Paris on 2nd and 3rd May. Data flows. In addition, the Commission and the Digital Agency of Japan will sign a memorandum of cooperation on digital identities and trust services to implement the so-called data free flow with trust. Boom. So this is actually very boring. I know it's terrifyingly boring, but there's two sides to the Japan Society 5.0 process. One is bureaucratic and AI governance, which is becoming more of a thing. And the other side is just private companies using AI software solutions to make appealing products to consumers or to deal with automation in factories instead of importing the third world. But they will import the third world anyways. So we'll have the third world working with the robots sooner rather than later. Anyways, the countries will share experiences on digital identity initiatives, such as the EU Digital Identity Wallet. This is the CBDC movement, by the way, in order to achieve a positive impact for international trade. The digital partnership program between the two allies was signed in 2022. And the EU and South Korea also announced a joint cooperation in the field of technology. So anyways, we have this sort of supranational, beyond national trend occurring with data free flow with trust, digital IDs, digital wallets for the CBDCs, and data free flow with trust. And I wonder if that data free flow with trust is growing to incorporate banking data as well and carbon data as well, because Japan is big into the carbon markets. So we see that the Kishida government is all in on these trends, and every time it happens, they go all in and just say that they're doing it without actually talking to anybody. And then when their popularity goes down because nobody actually wants these things, they say, well, how do we make our popularity improve? I know, I'll give a speech about being popular and hopefully that'll do it. But again, the policies really are like tunneling forward at a rapid pace for this digital ID and digital banking movements for the G7 economic sphere. Nobody votes for it and it becomes policy and they just kind of say, well, if we're not popular, it's just because people don't understand us and we need to go and make speeches so that we'll become more popular. Then they'll support our popularity. Then we can push these policies of digital ID even more. Creepy. Anyways, so that's a crazy aspect, isn't it? That's a crazy aspect. And then right underneath that on my list from the global fount of talking points from the Asia Nikkei, it's behind a paywall, but it ties in nicely with the previous article. Microsoft and Google partner with Japan cities on AI rules. So we have data free flow with trust. Google is a surveillance technology. Microsoft is a surveillance technology. It's almost as though like Microsoft is the surveillance technology of what happens inside of offices. And Google is the surveillance technology of what happens for people when they leave their offices. Like they go to the office and they use Microsoft products. Then they leave their office and they use Google products at home. And then we have like this synchronous surveillance you know, state going on. It's not, it's behind a paywall, so I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it says, when was this released? April 30th, 2024. Japanese cities will work with tech giants like Microsoft and Google to set guidelines for the use of AI in government services, aiming to do more with fewer employees while avoiding pitfalls. Notice that Japan is not developing their own systems. Japan is not saying, we're going to get Hitachi involved, we're going to get our AI scientists involved. No, we're going to import the largest private corporations in the world to develop AI systems that will affect how we govern. So do you really think Japan is a traditional society? Is this the work of traditionalists? They're not saying, hey, we need AI policies that reflect our traditional values. No. They're just saying, well, making AI is difficult, so we'll just get Microsoft and Google to do it. By the way, this strikingly reminds me of Hollywood policy in Canada at the turn of the 1900s, where film was becoming very, very popular. And Hollywood, of course, had an edge because they realized the value of the technology. There was this amazing confluence of, they just happened to be Jews, but a lot of Jews moved to California to escape New York. They found great weather. They started making movies. They built studios. And then they realized that people would pay for a product before they saw it. And soon we had the silver screen and movies galore. And so Canada wanted to get in on the action. So the government of the United States sent some people to Canada and just basically said, you don't need to make movie theaters and all the infrastructure and technology involved. That's just too hard. What we'll do, Hollywood will build your own. We'll build movie theaters for you. We'll provide the infrastructure for you. And we will show Canadians the hottest movies that just taking off like wildfire. But we understand that you need to have your representation involved. So we will include in our Hollywood movies references to Canadian nature. And then the hottest stars will start talking about Canadian nature in the middle of these Hollywood movies. And that will drive tourism for free to Canada. And the Canadian politicians, who probably got paid off, said, okay. So instead of Canada developing its own film industry, you know, like back in the, when film was really at its peak in the 90s, something like 99.5% of all movies in Canada were American movies. And then we had laws that would stipulate the filming of the mandatory screening of Canadian movies. But the market was so small, less than 1% of all movies from Canada were screened in Canada. So this also strikes me as something very similar, where Japan says the AI is just, wow, we can't do it. Our population's too small. We don't have what Microsoft and Google are already doing it. They'll do it for us, but they will just give us shout outs to our culture and work with us to make the AI governance according to Japanese laws. But I mean, come on. Thinking along those lines is very naive, as I've just said in the past, when Canada basically did the same thing and came out with no extra tourism, because tourists, like Hollywood stars, would be walking along in a dialogue and there would be some bird calls and they'd be like, oh, look, the flowering wild geese of Canada are flying by. But there was no such thing as flowering wild Canada geese, like there's Canadian geese. So they would just make up random stuff just to honor the agreement and put it in as like a talking point in the middle of a dialogue, and nobody would ever pay attention to it. And it never really worked. And I fear that this is the same thing. The Japanese units of Microsoft, Google, Amazon Web Services, and Oracle are among the companies taking part in a consortium on municipal AI governance that will start Wednesday, along with the cities of Osaka, Tsukuba, Nagoya, and Yokosuka. So you've probably heard it here first. Japan is going to implement Microsoft and Google into its AI governance systems. Remember, AI is so dangerous that we can't trust it. But at the same time, we have to use foreign companies to implement our AI governance systems. It only makes sense. So that also probably goes back to the EU and Japan and the data free flow with trust aspects as well. I wonder how much more I can do about this. I have a lot. I might actually cover the rest of this Japan Society 5.0 in the next one. But I think, well, just a couple of headlines then. Pope will attend a G7 summit to discuss AI, Italy says. Just a random one. And can AI help solve Japan's labor shortages is another one. I'll be including these up on MatthewPMBigelow.com. And I may as well do this one for the last one for today for Japan Society 5.0. From Asahi.com on April 28th, 2024. We covered this a little bit on last week's podcast, the sushi exhibition. But now we have some results. Tokyo exhibition looks at what technology will be like in 2050. You know, when all of us are supposed to be dead. Flying cars and the latest in robotics. These are some of the attractions of an exhibition now on in Tokyo to showcase advanced technology that might be widespread in 2050. Flying cars and robotics have been at every tech show since 1927. Even like Tesla, the original Tesla, Nikolai Tesla, was showcasing remote control boats at like some of those Chicago World Fairs in 1902 or something like that. Among the items that visitors can try out at the Sushi Tech, the Sustainable High City Tech Tokyo Exhibition. Among the items that visitors can try out there are walking robots that children can operate, as well as a simulated ride on a flying car. Oh, a simulated ride. The exhibition continues until May 26th. As one of the sponsors of the exhibition, the Tokyo Metropolitan Government is looking for possible solutions to issues like traffic congestion in major urban areas, as well as global warming. So notice how these things never actually manifest themselves. Flying cars. All this stuff never happens, but instead they just make the next thing happen and global warming. We're not actually going to implement any of these ideas. We're just going to rewash them every year, but then reintroduce new ones on top of that. So it's global flying cars for global warming. Let's just take a look at the, I think that's okay. Anyways, a lot of this stuff is not as bombastic and as realistic as it used to be either. So I think a lot of people are tuning out. And I think that's going to be the Japan Society last one. I'll just, because I don't want to cover it then. And I have another bevy of technologies and this one doesn't fit in with it. Japan City streams AI avatar vids of mayor speaking English to connect with foreigners. No foreigner is going to care. We would rather just read the subtitles. We don't need a mayor, an avatar of a mayor, speaking your dumb mayor English. We just don't need it. And that's today's Japan Society 5.0 on the two sides of the thing of the equation. The startups that are, or companies or private companies that are just releasing products for consumers that they might find interesting for their daily lives. Versus the bureaucratic AI governance, free flow data with trust. Today was the latter half, the governance style. But that stuff's really going to trickle down. Really going to trickle down. If you don't think that's going to trickle down, you're so wrong. Because it looks like it's just gobbledygook at international conferences or G7 summits and things like that. But it's like, oh, no, we have an AI summit. Oh, we have this policy. Oh, the EU and Japan are going to work with digital free flow, with data free flow with trust. Oh, and now Japan is going to have municipal AI governance, and we're going to be using Microsoft and Google to do that. By the way, Japan is based. They're a traditional society, and they would never put up with that type of stuff.
The fourth industrial revolution will enable us to create a new society. Artificial intelligence will transform the big data collected through the Internet of Things into new wisdom. Society 5.0, a technology-based, human-centered society. Industrial revolution will raise our standard of living and solve various challenges we face. It will, for example, free us from the stress of driving, allowing us to safely visit anyone.
Let's take a look at some China.
Here we go.
I was going to include this with some supply chain stuff, but we'll just take a look at China. China confirms it's building a fourth aircraft carrier, and tables are turning by popularmechanics.com. A Chinese admiral has confirmed that China is constructing its fourth aircraft carrier. China commissioned its first carrier in 2012 and now has a fleet of three ships. Wow. Although China's carrier fleet is growing rapidly, it is still only half the size of the U.S. Pacific Fleet's carrier force. China is reportedly building a fourth aircraft carrier, making it the second largest carrier power behind the United States. A report in Hong Kong state media claims that there will be an announcement soon on a new flat top, along with the release of technical details. The fourth carrier might be China's first nuclear-powered surface ship, a major milestone in ship development, and the key toward projecting Chinese military power abroad, or protecting Chinese supply chains abroad. How about that? Do I have a picture? A reporter for the state-owned Hong Kong Commercial Daily questioned Chinese Navy Vice Admiral and Political Commissar Yuan Huaji about whether or not China's next carrier would be nuclear-powered and what it would be named. Huaji reportedly smiled when asked if the carrier would use nuclear propulsion and said there would be an announcement soon. While the exchange does not sound like a definitive yes, we can kind of imagine that it is moving towards that area. China has three aircraft carriers, the Liaoning, the Shandong, and the Fujian. Liaoning began life as a Soviet Navy carrier. I guess this would be, in the Soviets, but the USSR collapsed before it could be finished. The unfinished hull was sold in 1998 to a Hong Kong businessman, but it was transferred to the People's Liberation Army, which commissioned it in 2012 as an aircraft carrier. Liaoning uses a less efficient ski ramp instead of aircraft catapults. So in 2012, China gets its first one as a Soviet hull. But in 2019, the Shandong, which also uses ski ramps, was built from the ground up. And Fujian, which was only recently completed construction, was built without a ski ramp and instead reportedly uses an electromagnetic aircraft launch system, similar to the American EMAL systems on Ford-class carriers. And that's what I wanted to get to. In just a period of 12, 15 years, China goes from commissioning, like taking a Soviet hull and making an aircraft carrier, 15 years later, electromagnetic like launches. But that's how fast they're moving. And they're making a fourth one as well. A lot of people say, oh, just a paper tiger, blah, blah, blah. Well, you go and try and fuck up a Chinese aircraft carrier. I mean, if they have their supply chains and they have a very aggressive Coast Guard now that's monitoring a lot in the South China Sea, and they'll just drive up to Vietnamese ships and like break them apart with their water cannons. So you don't have necessarily only have the aircraft carriers, you have the Navy that surrounds it to in effect establish a new global hegemony for the Chinese Belt and Road Initiative, or the One Belt, One Road. And the maritime avenues for this road are crucial for its completion. So we have this idea that we have a growing number of aircraft carriers and other naval capacities emerging from China, not only to project power, but to protect lanes, shipping lanes. And if you wonder why China is pushing so deep into the South China Sea, maybe they aim to have a lot of shipping lanes there that are strictly controlled by China, by the way. They will kick out the Americans, Japanese, everybody else. They will not give a shit about any of them if it means taking it for themselves. Next one for China. This one's really interesting. This one comes to us from the AsiaTimes.com. Oh, this is, oh my God, this site uses cookies? What? Should I click OK or should I go and just set my details? Asia Times. This one's from April 23rd, 2024. And if you've listened to the end, congratulations, because this is a doozy. China closing in on laser-propelled fast and stealth subs. Well, you might say, this is a Japan What podcast. What do we care about China? Well, Japan has a lot of interest in the supply chains around the world as well. And Japan is not invited into the BRICS. Japan is not invited into the One Belt, One Road policy. So the more that we see China edge out into the Pacific and create more of hegemonic supply chain routes around the world, the less we'll see Japan participating in it or participating in it as a subsidiary. Not joining in, but I mean, you know, pay to play type of thing. We'll be whores. China and U.S. locked an underwater race to produce new generation of submarines driven by less detectable propulsion technologies. And like I said, China in 2012, Soviet era aircraft carrier. Now built from its own domestic capacity with electromagnetic rails to launch fighter craft. China may be moving closer to the holy grail of submarine stealth technology, a propulsion system with no mechanical moving parts. Such technology would eliminate all detectable vibrations, allowing for unprecedented underwater stealth capabilities. The South China Morning Post reported that Chinese scientists have found ways to significantly improve the efficiency of laser propulsions, which could one day drive submarines. The report says the new technology can produce nearly 70,000 newtons of thrust. I know you know what that means. Using 2 megawatts of laser power emitted through the submarine's coating of optical fibers, each thinner than a human hair. It'll explain it in a minute. The report notes that the technology works by leveraging supercavitation generated by laser pulses vaporizing seawater, which can significantly reduce water resistance. It claims that the underwater fiber laser-induced plasma detonation wave propulsion eliminates detectable mechanical noise, enabling greater stealth. To be sure, laser propulsion technology is not new. 20 years ago, Japanese scientists introduced the concept of using lasers to create plasma in water and harness the detonation wave produced by plasma expansion for propulsion. However, the idea didn't progress, and as the scientists found it challenging to generate a directional driving force as the detonation wave expands in all directions from a single point. Despite that setback, China and several other countries have funded research on using tiny spherical metal particles to create a force on submarines. Detonation waves can propel particles in a specific direction, exerting an opposite force on the submarine. Still, the current efficiency is too low to be practical, with 1 watt of laser power generating only 1/1,000,000th of a newton of thrust. However, the SCMP report says Chinese scientists from Harbin Engineering University, that's a dual-use pretty much university, have designed a laser engine that improves the efficiency of converting lasers into thrust by 3 to 4 orders of magnitude. They modified the fibers by adding a gun barrel-like device with a U-shaped interface and used a pair of barrels to bombard particles in the working medium. They also added designed protruding structures inside the barrel to minimize interaction and internal friction between shock waves. While SCMP says that a submarine nuclear reactor produces over 150 megawatts, which is enough for the laser propulsion system, it notes various design challenges such as heat dissipation by the optical fibers, resilience in high power and high salinity environments, and the alignment of optical fiber emission apertures with the submarine's anechoic panels. In contrast to China, the U.S. has researched magnetohydrodynamic drive technology since the 1960s. This technology utilizes magnetic fields and electrically conducting fluids to generate thrust. But it goes on from there. So it goes on to DARPA. It's a very interesting article. I'll cut it off there. If you're interested in that type of stuff, and who isn't? Who is not interested? Laser submarines? The plasma direction, stealth? Come on! As if that's not the awesomest thing I've ever heard in the past 25 years. Laser submarines. Oh, that's the title of the pod. AI laser submarines. So that's going to be China for today. As we can kind of see, the rapid rise in China, a lot of people just disparage it. So, well, their economy sucks and their kids are on the street. So that means China's done. Stupid China. Blah, blah, blah. No. They're building moon bases on the far side of the moon, and they're getting a lot of stuff done, including developing their own aircraft carriers with magneto rails and also laser submarines. And you better believe that they're going to be using AI technology in those Chinese laser submarines, making them the world's first Chinese AI laser submarines.
Here we go.
Remember to go to MatthewPMBigelow.com. That's the official website of the Japan Lab podcast. It's my name, Matthew PM Bigelow. You can also make donations via PayPal at paypal.me/JapanWUT. We're also part of the podcasting 2.0 infrastructure. Download a new podcasting app. It could be Fountain, could be Podverse, and you will be able to send Bitcoin in the form of Satoshis, those are micropayments, directly from your wallet, your Get Albi wallet, to the podcaster of your choice, if they are lit. And Japan What Podcast is lit. I've just moved. I have kids. I need some funds. Please help me out. The least you can do is go to the website, check out the pictures, click on the links. All that stuff I talked about is just happening, by the way. It's beyond crazy, in my opinion. But it's 2024. It's not 1942. So thank you very much for listening to the Japan What Podcast. Coming at you from the Samon Show, the final broadcast from the Samon Show studios in Shinjuku, Tokyo, Japan, the armpit of Asia. I bid thee a wonderful and a heartful and another heartful Ja Mata Ne.
Stick it up.